I hope you enjoy this talk. These talks are always offered freely so that no one is ever denied access to them. And your support, or dana, also makes a big difference. Dana is the ancient Pali word for spontaneous generosity of heart. If you feel inspired to support these talks by offering dana, you can do so by visiting my website at www.mindfulvalley.com. Thank you so much. As most of you know, tonight is the last of the Noble Eightfold Path, the last talk in the series. And this is right or skillful or wise concentration, samadhi. So in the Pali language, the common language in the Buddha's time, the word for concentration is samadhi, and its root meaning means to bring together, which I really like. And sometimes I like to think of this bringing together aspect as similar, again, to the way that you zoom a camera lens into whatever you're going to take a picture of. I love to take photos. Many of you know this. And so I think of it that way. For instance, maybe you're out walking in the fields, right? And you spot a caterpillar crawling on the edge of a leaf. And if you want to get a really sharp and close image of it, you're going to need to zoom in and focus on just that one thing and let the rest of the background kind of fade out. So even when you're zooming your lens in, the reason I chose the image of a caterpillar is it's something that's constantly still moving. It's moving slowly, but it's still moving. And it's the same way with our breath. Our breath is still moving. It's not something that's static. And it's easier to take a picture, of course, of something that's just completely not moving and static. So the rest of the background, if you will, if you can stay with me in the field, that is also still moving, right? There's all these things happening in the background. So in my case, I live out on the country on a farm, and so there's fields and trees and cows and a lot of other noises. So again, with our practice, we can do the very same thing with our breath. We gather, zoom in, bring together our attention, and really practice to keep our focus on that one thing. This is in the beginning, that one thing, just the breath. And of course, just like that caterpillar, as the breath, as you focus more and more on this moving thing, it becomes more and more interesting as we pay attention to it. It just gets more fascinating. So, for instance, as you're focusing maybe on the caterpillar, if you can imagine that, and you let go of or kind of put out of your mind all the rest of the stuff that's going on in the background and just get really fascinated by the caterpillar and the movement of this caterpillar, you'll start to notice the caterpillar's colors and textures and all maybe the different little intricate shapes and spots, the actual way it moves. How does a caterpillar move? Is it always going forward or does it go backward or upside down? You know, how does it move? You might notice all its individual little feet. Start counting them if you're really going to go crazy, you know. And even all its delicate little hairs. They're fascinating if you could stand and watch it for that long, right? And again, when we're focused, what we're trying to do is not let our attention fall away from and distract us from this caterpillar. And of course, if we're out sitting in the field long enough, we are going to get distracted. It's just we're going to get distracted in this field. So for instance, that annoying squirrel in the tree, it will not stop squeaking, you know, when you're trying to pay attention or throwing acorns at your head, maybe, or a shadow of a hawk flying above, you can get distracted by that, or sound of the big lawnmower across the street, or, you know, maybe the sound of that grumpy bull that keeps getting closer and closer. I'm always on the lookout for that bull because he is grouchy. And all of these things represent our discursive thoughts and our stories and our narratives, all our wanting, all our not wanting, all our pesky emotions that want to drag us away from the moment and back out into the landscape of thought, if you will. Think of the landscape as the landscape of thought. And when this happens, it's right here that we can use right effort and right mindfulness to practice noticing that we've become distracted and bring ourselves back again and again to the focus of our attention, right? The tiny movements of the caterpillar, the tiniest, tiniest movements of our breath. And in practice, as we find that we can maintain more and more awareness over time on our breath, what happens next is that we start to find the breath incredibly boring, right? And, you know, sometimes it's like pretty much the same and definitely not something that can hold our attention for that long. You know, becomes that sometimes, doesn't it? Dr. John Kabat-Zinn, the founder of MBSR, which I used to teach, a workshop, 8-week workshop, has a really interesting way of teaching us how we can almost become instantly fascinated by the breath, and I want to offer you this practice tonight. So I'm going to invite you to try this, okay? So it's very simple. You don't have to get in a great posture or anything, but close the mouth, keep the mouth closed, and then take your thumb and forefinger and place them gently on your nostrils, okay? Got it? Now go ahead and squeeze. And I want you to tell me when the breath starts to get interesting. I'm sorry. That's not from me. That's right from John Kabat-Zinn. So, I'm sorry to torture you. One of my teachers, Jack Kornfeld, I think I've shared this story before, said that when he was in India, his teacher asked him and the other students to tell him every single day, you know, you have a meeting with your teacher. And so they would go in and they would meet. And every single day for a year, the teacher would ask, what was different about the breath today? Right? And it couldn't be the same as it was yesterday or the day before. Something different now. What's different now? So it was training them to pay that close attention to the breath and get that intimate and familiar with it, okay? And so with right concentration, when we're working to establish a kind of calm, patient attention, we are asked to get super curious about the simple act of breathing until we realize that it's actually not a simple practice at all and definitely not boring. And of course, this does take some time and patience and effort, which is why it's a practice, right? And why I encourage you not to give up right away. Please do not give up right away if you find that you can't seem to concentrate or the breath seems boring or you're just not getting it. I want you to know, please don't give up, okay? So for instance, in the beginning, when we first start to follow and feel the breath in the body, maybe it just feels really like a small, tiny movement, right? So maybe we can only, in the beginning, some people can only feel the sensation on the outside of the nose, not even inside the body. It's like maybe on the upper lip and you start there. Okay, I can feel the breath kind of on the upper lip. And we may be able to do this even when we start, feel the breath for 1 second until we're dragged into thought again. And then we try again. And we do this over and over. And then after a while, maybe we start to sense the subtle changes in temperature and flow and the different duration of each breath, right? How it changes over time. And then, of course, as we continue to practice and hone our concentration, we might start to feel 100 different things about the breath, the subtlest sensations of breathing. So we might begin to sense all the swirls and movements and tingles and flow just get really fascinated by that, like a stream, watching a stream, you know, notice the flow and eddy and how it changes. And as an example of this, how we get down to the subtlest levels, when we're reading a book, and I hope some of you, many of us still read a book these days, an actual book, we're usually, when we're reading, we're caught up in the story that's being told, aren't we? And sort of the big picture, we're caught up in that rather than focusing on each individual sentence or each individual word or even each individual letter. And I want you to, maybe as a practice, check that out. Check it out. See if you can really, really, really slow it down so that you can suddenly become aware of each tiny letter and each tiny loop and swirl of the font even. So this is the same way that we start to slow down and notice each tiny movement or moment of experience. So that can be a practice for you, an awareness practice. And by the way, I want to mention, stop here for a second and just mention that sometimes the breath is just not something that we want to focus on. It's not good for us for some reason. Maybe we have a respiratory infection or we have a cold or it's uncomfortable. We don't like focusing on the breath for whatever reason. That's really okay. If you have difficulty, even temporarily, like a cold, focusing on the breath, go to sound. Sound is fantastic for this, because again, unless you're in a sensory deprivation tank, you're going to hear sound, right? Even if it's very subtle. And it's constantly changing and moving, constantly moving. Especially, you know, we're out here, we're meditating next to the highway, or the road, we hear that all the time. And it's kind of nice because it gives you something to focus your attention on, because you're still present in your body listening to the vibration of sound, okay? And you're also aware of, sound is simply a vibration, so you can be aware of the body and how sound is flowing through the body and how sound affects the body. And that can get on a really interesting, subtle level too. So with either breath or sound, as our concentration develops even more, we're going to be able to then do this with all of our bodily sensations, our whole body. Wow, you know, we start with the breath and then we go to all the little cells and subtle dance of sensation in the body. And then we move on to the mind and notice the subtle changes in the mind, right? So we start to experience more and more the moment by moment process of the mind doing its thing, okay? The Buddha was once asked if he could give an example of a moment of mind. And he said he couldn't do it. It was impossible to describe how fast it was. But he said, suppose there's a tiny and delicate spider web. And suppose you bring a candle to burn it. How long would it take to burn that spider web? Right? He says, you could hardly bring the candle close to the web before it starts to burn. And he said that within such a short period of time, thousands and thousands of mind moments arise and mature and pass away. Okay? So if you haven't gotten a hang of this yet, don't worry about it. Right? So in our own practice, we're being asked to really slow the process down by first honing in on all the subtle changes in our breath. And again, or again, maybe with sound, and then move that into our bodies and then our minds, okay? As we become even more curious about this, what happens is that our capacity to sense into both our body and our breath deepens, and then new layers of sensation kind of continue to open up for us. So it just gets deeper and richer and more interesting the more you use your concentration practice to inquire about this. And as we do this and deepen our attention even further, the interesting part is what eventually happens is that we experience the breath as well as our entire body as less and less solid and static, right? And we just start to open up to pure presence and sensation, experiencing the flow of all of it, right? So we start to have that sense of being just open, and maybe that sense of emptiness, right? It's the flow. Sometimes when this happens, and many of you may have experienced this already, the breath and even a sense of a body can start to just kind of disappear altogether, right? And I don't want you to worry, you haven't gone anywhere. You're not floating, right? We're also not out of body at all. We're not out of body. We're still sensing everything, and we're still present for it. We're just not attached to a sense of body. We're not identifying with whatever we're experiencing. We're just experiencing the flow. You guys with me? So the late John Dado Lori Roshi, who's a Soto Zen teacher, said this: samadhi, concentration, is a state of consciousness that lies beyond waking, dreaming, or deep sleep. It is a slowing down of our mental activity through single-pointed concentration. Okay. So our concentration practice can actually bring us to this great state of just being right here, completely present, without all the clouds that are obscuring, if you will, that beautiful blue sky of the mind. And this concentration, this sort of deep presence, is said to bring us great happiness when it's done in a way that is considered wholesome. And what this means is that it's free of what are called the hindrances, which you may recall are greed, aversion, restlessness and worry, sloth and torpor, and doubt. You guys like that word, sloth? Yeah. And I don't have time to go into these in more detail tonight, but here we're being asked to direct our attention in a very specific way, with the intention of cultivating a heart and mind that is filled with kindness and compassion, free of thoughts that are attempting to protect or defend or prop up a sense of self. So it's really important the way we do this, okay? It has to be wholesome. For instance, if we're concentrating on something with a sort of evil intent, for instance, like a cat concentrates on pouncing on a mouse, you know, it's not going to bring us a lot of happiness and joy in our lives. The Buddha tells us, pay attention to the mind. It is subtle and difficult to perceive. Thoughts wander wherever they please. The mind, well directed, will bring happiness. Pay attention to the mind. It is subtle and difficult to perceive. Thoughts wander wherever they please. The mind, well directed, will bring happiness. So maybe to encourage you even more here, as we continue, our concentration practice can help us to start entering what are called the jhanas, or the bliss states that lead to more enlightenment. And I won't go into those tonight, but I want to mention the bliss states maybe to entice you to have a little bit more concentration in your practice. So traditionally, right concentration is considered, as I said earlier, the last of the spokes of the Noble Eightfold Path of the Dhamma Chakra. But again, with all of these, it doesn't mean that it, in any way, that it's last in importance. Each part of the path supports the other seven parts. So really, you should think of them more as a maybe a hologram, or connected in a kind of circle, or woven into a web, rather than in list form. And this is the way I have to do it, like in steps. It's more of a hologram. With right concentration, though, for your concentration to ripen, it's said that you really need to be turning all the rest of the spokes of your wheel to achieve right concentration. And there's a reason for this, which is, I think, why it's last. So, for instance, consider the ethics part of our wheel, right speech, right action and right livelihood. If we're not practicing, if we're not living a moral life and practicing right or skillful speech, action, or livelihood, what's going to happen is we're likely going to be sitting with a little or even a lot of worry and regret, right? Nervousness, restlessness, which is going to make it much more difficult for us to concentrate, okay? For not leading an ethical life. And if we don't have right or skillful intention or view, if we don't really know or understand why we're practicing, what am I doing, right? It's also going to make it more difficult for us to concentrate because we don't have any intention and goal. And finally, if we're not putting a lot of right effort or right or skillful mindfulness into our practice, we're going to tend to be sitting with a mind that's totally distracted, right? Because there's no effort or mindfulness in it. We're just sitting and kind of wandering around in the soup of our thoughts. All of that being said, as we've all experienced, trying to concentrate when we're meditating can be incredibly frustrating, right? Especially in the beginning, but also after 30 years sometimes. You're just going to have days like that. And so it's really helpful to know that it comes with the territory, this lack of concentration, which is why we're practicing. And also, nothing in our culture or our schooling has really taught us to study and calm our attention, has it? Did you learn this stuff when you were a kid? Did you? They're starting to teach it now. It's fantastic. But, you know, one psychologist has called us a society of attentional spastics. Yeah. Right? It's true. Especially with our cell phones now. Right? So not being able to concentrate for long periods is completely normal, especially in the beginning when we start out. But again, sometimes even after decades, we can do this. So, you know, when I was teaching the MBSR workshops, I would try to encourage my students that telling them that sometimes in the beginning, the program, mindfulness-based stress reduction, was sometimes called the stress production program. It really was. You know, people would start and say, God, it's so stressful. Why am I here? And the reason for this is that, you know, as we start to focus on the body and the breath, and some space, a little bit of space starts to open up so that we can take a peek into the nature of our minds, what we discover is what the mind's been doing all along without our awareness of what the mind has been doing. And what we see is that there's a lot of talking, right? A lot of discussion and opinion and judgment and conversation and images and stuff, right? And even arguing going on in there, right? And like we're at a very loud party and it seems totally disjointed, one thought on top of the other. And we often recognize also how fast we've been going and how addicted our minds are, addicted to going fast, even in our thinking, right? We want our thinking to go fast. We want to scroll faster, you know, in our own mind. We also start feeling all that accumulated stress and tension in our bodies, right? All the pain and achingness and tiredness maybe that we've been ignoring or just assuming many times that that's just the normal state of my body, right? So it's like we see that we're tired and achy maybe, and then it's just, well, that's my normal state. But it's not, right? Normal state is relaxed, but we're just so used to being in that state. And when we start to sit and concentrate, that's what we start to notice. So it can feel like, wow, now there's actually more stress. And then what we do is we try to take all of this chaos in our minds and our bodies, of course, and we try to control it. And the mind, of course, won't have anything to do with this and tends to wander all over the place. So I love the way Jack Kornfeld compares our state of untrained mind to that of a puppy. He says, our untrained mind is like a puppy. And has anybody here ever tried to train a puppy? Show of hands. Wow, a lot of you, okay. So when you set the puppy down and say, stay, does a puppy stay when you first when you first set it down, right? It jumps out of your hands and it runs all over the place in no discernible direction, right? Knocks things down and maybe goes over to the corner and pees in the wall, right? And so, you know, that's our mind. That's our untrained mind right there. And so when we're training the puppy, we have to start over again and again and again. And we have to do it with a lot of patience and a lot of kindness, right? And when we do, after a while, what happens? After a while, the puppy learns to sit. It's kind of miraculous, but it happens, you know? And sometimes they'll misbehave, right? They're dogs, they're going to misbehave and act like a puppy again. And then you bring them back, and you do it again and again. So it's the very same way with our practice, with meditation practice. And, you know, sometimes it feels like, you know, it's been years, and that puppy's just never going to get it, right? I don't think this puppy can do this. Or this is hopeless, it's going to take too long, or some of the things that come up in the mind, or, you know, I just can't do it. You know, I'm hopeless in some way. But again, amazingly, remember that the puppy always learns to sit in most cases and maybe learns some tricks along the way, which is super cool. So it's important to note here that just like training the puppy, we also need to really consider how. Really important. This is probably the most important point I'll make all night, actually. How do we train the puppy? How do we train ourselves to practice? So if we're working to train the mind to focus and we try to yank our concentration back with irritation or judgment, it's not going to do us much good, right? If you say, damn it, you know, do it right in kind of a drill sergeant way. St. Francis de Sales explains how we train the mind with kindness and patience this way. It says, bring yourself back to the point quite gently, gently. And even if you do nothing during the whole of your hour, but bring your heart back 1,000 times, though it went away every time you brought it back, your hour would be very well employed. Okay. So, same way, really important to remember that we do not beat the puppy. Don't beat the puppy. And don't beat up on yourself. And it's so easy for us to do. So notice when you're doing it and bring some kindness, bring some patience. So also remember that concentration practice does involve, just like training a puppy, it does involve effort and it requires discipline. You know, we can't just train the puppy one day and then wait a couple weeks and try again and then kind of blow it off for a week or two and try again, right? Does that work? No. We have to have discipline and we have to have effort, but it is never a matter of force, ever, ever a matter of force. So we simply pick the puppy up again and return and reconnect with this present moment. So this practice that I learned from Pema Chodron once, I will never forget, and I want to share that with you. I think I've shared this before in here, but she says that whenever we noticed that our mind has wandered away into the past or future, or been hijacked by thoughts, or we've been caught up in busy mind for 10 minutes and really not practicing, what do we usually say to ourselves? Really be honest. Isn't the first thing sometimes, damn it, right? God, I've been gone for 10 minutes, right? And so instead of saying, oh, shit, what we can say is, yay, me, okay? So we congratulate ourselves for bringing ourselves home and noticing that we've been gone, because what brought us back? What brought us back was our mindfulness practice. And so, you know, after congratulating ourselves, we re-relax the body. Okay, let me come back home. Let me re-relax the body. Let me come back home. And we get to know that feeling of presence, right? And we get to compare. What does it feel like to just be awake and present in my body and mind? And what did it feel like to be away in dreamland? And compare. And then notice, really bask in presence. And then until your mind goes away, which it might 2 minutes, 1 minute, 1 second later. It's okay. We're practicing to get to know the feeling of presence. What does that feel like? It's kind of like giving the puppy a kind of cookie, if you want to look at it that way, and letting the puppy enjoy the cookie to remember what that feels like. Good boy, good girl, you know. And again, for many of us, returning to the breath or presence 10,000 or 10,000 times may again seem really boring or maybe of questionable importance sometimes. Why am I doing this? Really, why am I sitting here practicing? But you might consider, how many times during your day are you distracted from the reality of your life? How many moments are you distracted and really lost in the dream of thought, which means you're not living your life, you're dreaming about your life, you're not actually present for it, right? That's what we're practicing, to not dream, to wake up. And so what we're doing in the formal practice when we're training the mind to concentrate and focus is, again, training ourselves to be present and awake right now in this moment. And if you'll let me go on with this puppy analogy, we're learning how to sit and stay in the present moment, however it is, by the way. You know, it doesn't have to be pleasant. You know, we try to run away from that, you know, or run towards what's pleasant. We're learning to stay with however it is. So, you know, without beating ourselves up, also stay. And again, just to acknowledge that this requires an ocean of patience, because our habit of wanting to be somewhere else is so strong. It's a conditioned habit. If you start to notice, I don't really want to be here sometimes, unless I'm getting a massage, right? Right? Unless it's so pleasant and I'm eating something really yummy. Yeah, I want to sit here and enjoy this Haagen-Dazs, you know? But sometimes don't we even go away for that? Those of you who have massage, you're getting a massage, right? And it's like, or you're eating something delicious. And how often are you just thinking about something else? I notice that when I'm getting a massage. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. Come back. You've only got an hour, you know. And so it's a really, really strong habit. And we've done this for many years. So this is what we're trying to change with practice. And you might notice, too, that as we're concentrating, it can sometimes feel as if we're always starting over and always losing our practice. And so whenever this happens, you might just ask yourself or considered, where have I actually gone? Really ask yourself that. Where have I actually gone? And you might recognize that really it's only a mood or a thought or some kind of doubt that is just swept through like a wave. You haven't gone anywhere. You've been present the whole time. I was just sensing this thought was passing by, and I kind of looked at it, and I felt this emotion passing by, right? Something going through me or a mood, right? And so as soon as we can recognize this, we can let go and settle back again to this moment and the next and realize, start to recognize more and more that really we are in constant flow, you know? We are really, again, the ocean, and we can always and forever begin again. Jack Kornfeld talks about this as the mind producing waves. And with practice, we can simply acknowledge surf's up. You know, here's a wave of memories from when I was 3 or 4, or whatever it is. You know, here's the planning wave. There it is. Felt that. And then it's time to reconnect with the ocean and follow the rhythm of the breath. Teacher Sharon Salzberg tells us, the heart of skillful meditation is the ability to let go and begin again over and over. There is no distance to transverse in recollecting our attention. As soon as we realize we've been lost in discursive thought or have lost touch with the chosen contemplation, right in that moment, we can begin again. Nothing has been ruined, and there is no such thing as failing. There is nowhere the attention can wander to, and no duration of distraction from which we cannot completely let go and in a moment begin again. I love that from her. There is no such thing as failing. And I think that's really true with practice. And don't you sometimes feel that way when you sit up from a practice? Like if somehow if that was just a terrible sit. I hear people say that all the time to me. And it wasn't. Every moment that you're practicing, is practice. You have not failed. So, to end, I want to invite you into just a brief practice. But if you need to stretch because you've been sitting, go ahead and stand and do a little stretch. And we'll just sit for a couple minutes after. And so, as always, just letting the eyes softly close, and taking a nice deep breath in, and slow exhale out, letting the shoulders drop. And imagining the zooming in of a camera lens to the breath. And see if you can hone your attention. Maybe right at the nostrils, the entryway to the breath. And just start noticing the subtle sensations here. You might notice, for instance, the breath's temperature and how this is constantly changing. And is it possible to notice when it changes? Get that close to it. So you might notice that it's cool. When does it start to warm? When does it change? When is it the coldest? When is it the warmest? Are there variations in the length of each inhale or exhale? Are they always the same? Can you notice subtle differences? What about the sensations of the breath? The movement, the flow of air on the skin, inside of the nostrils and the throat. Tingles, swirls, echoes, touch, texture even. You can think of fabric. Is it silky, cloth, rough? What's the fabric of the breath? Is there a pause between the breaths? Where's the pause? Or you might notice the beginning, what that feels like, and the end. Can you catch the beginning and the end? Or the space in between? Is there an in-between space? What is the sense of the body itself on the inhale as opposed to the exhale? Again, if the mind wanders, treat it like a puppy with kindness and bring it back home. Begin again. No worries. With the eyes still closed, just listening to these words from Danusha Lemaris, who writes, "And what am I doing here in a yurt on the side of a hill at the ragged edge of the tree line, sheltered by conifer and bay, watching the wind lift softly the dry leaves and bamboo? I lie on the floor and let the sun fall across my back as I have been for the past hour, listening to the distant traffic, to the calls of birds I cannot name. Once I had so much I wanted to accomplish. Now all I know is that I want to get closer to it, to the rocky slope, the orange petals of nasturtium adorning the fence, the wind's sudden breath. Close enough that I can almost feel at night the slight pressure of the stars against my skin. Isn't this what the mystics meant when they spoke of forsaking the world? Not to turn our backs to it, only to its elaborate plots, its complicated pleasures, in favor of the pine's long shadow, the slow song of the grass. I'm always forgetting and remembering and forgetting. I want to leave something here in the rough dirt, a twig, a small stone, perhaps this poem, a reminder to begin again by listening carefully with the body's rapt attention. Remember to this, to this."